Well, hello, everyone. Carrie, I love Prayer Circle. I just love, love Prayer Circle. I'm not always here right at the top of the hour to start it, but I always like to come and hear at least part of it. And today I was able to be here for the whole time. I hope you all can hear me today. I'm in a slightly different setup today because I have guys painting my house, and they're painting the back right now, which is where my office is. It's on the back side of the house, and they are blaring, you know, Pink Floyd and AC/DC. And all that kind of music. And so in my office, there's all this loud rock and roll, which is really cool. I really do like the music. I'm teasing them because they're like 30 and they're playing music from when I was in high school. you know, it's very, very, very loud in my office. So I'm sitting in a recliner in another room. Carrie says she doesn't have sound, but I think that Kathy and Lynn do. Is that true? If you guys could type in that you have sound. Oh, you have sound now, Carrie. Okay, great. Great, great. well, it's really good to be back here with the Guiding Light. It feels like forever. It wasn't forever. It was only 2 weeks. But it feels like forever. And I'm really happy to be back because I love the Guiding Light. The Guiding Light is a precious time for me. And before I left for Ireland, we were looking at the book of Mark, the story of Jesus going into the Garden of Gethsemane. And we were looking with Jesus at that fear of death that can arise when we're on the brink of awakening, the brink of ego death. And I remember we also looked at a recording of Dr. David Hawkins where he described his experience. And I remember he used words like extreme terror. of course, he said it only lasted a couple of minutes in Earth time, but that it was extreme. I remember he was very emphatic about that. And for me, again, you know, I don't know if everybody has that same experience. I know that Ramana Maharshi experienced the fear of death in his awakening. Michael Langford has told me in private communication that he experienced this fear. You know, I've heard other people, I think I've heard Ellie Ruzdar kind of mention it like in passing. You know, she didn't go into great detail about this fear like Dr. David Hawkins did, but she mentioned it. There was someone else, I can't remember who it was, that I heard recently and commented about, you know, it feels like a death. You know, sometimes they mention it just kind of lightly to where you could almost not hear it if you didn't want to hear it. It seems that several people have commented on this, but whether it's an experience that happens 100% of the time, I don't know. I mean, how could I know? Maybe nothing's true all of the time, right? Maybe every single awakening experience to some degree is unique. I feel in my intuition that it is a mistake to imagine exactly what the experience of awakening is or exactly what awakening is and then turn that into a belief. Because if somehow this grace comes to us in a different way, and we've imagined it in a specific way, we could miss our opportunity, miss our invitation. And at the same time, I think it's helpful to know that for at least some people, there is an extreme fear of death. There is an extreme terror. And to know that that is a possibility. So that if our experience is similar to that one, we can have a prepared mind that is prepared and ready to rest, accept, and trust right through it. So that, you know, if this extreme terror should come upon us, so that there's some part of us that knows, hey, this is what others have experienced too. They talked about it, right? And they survived it, so will I. Right? You know, that can be helpful if it happens that way. So, yeah, not turning it into belief, but recognizing it as a possibility and being prepared in case it happens that way for us, that feels very balanced and healthy for me. But I'm also willing for, you know, a very light, non-eventful, nothing to talk about, no stories to tell type of awakening. It doesn't have to be this dramatic event, but if it is, it is, right? You know, if it is, it is. Time for me to play a song. And I don't know exactly how the music will sound, again, because I'm not in my office. I don't have my speakers. But I've been told before that it doesn't sound too bad when I just play from my laptop. You'll hear the little thump thump as I double click on the laptop. Here's some thump thump. I think you guys probably heard that. And here's a song I'm going to play today. This song is called Whispering Heart, and it's by Deva Premal and Mitten. Only for some reason this time it's listed as Mitten and Deva Premal. I think Mitten is taking the lead in this particular song. So why don't we listen to this, and then we'll begin a new chapter in the book of John, John chapter 18, in case anybody wants to get their Bible ready. Here we go.
Thank you.
That was such a nice and peaceful song, wasn't it? I really enjoyed that. I was feeling the peace of Prayer Circle, and then to follow it up with the peace of that song, just such a joy. I mean, oh my goodness, it's, you know, I really love that quietness that's in the universe. And it seems like I hear that quietness in the universe more. And I just love it. And so that's what that song, again, brought to the forefront, is that quietness that exists in the universe. Everything, all of the noise is within the quietness. And sometimes people, they see the noise, but they don't see the quietness. But the quietness is so lovely. All right, so let's go to the Bible. I remember when I was a young girl, I don't know how old I was, 10, 11 maybe. I used to walk, I guess it must have been 11. I used to walk to church because my family didn't go to church and I was beginning to get the bug. You know, I wanted to know God. So I would walk to church, and the nearest church was a little white Southern Baptist church. It was probably about 2 blocks from my house. It seems like 1 block one direction and 1 block the other direction I was there. And I loved the preaching. I don't know why. I just remember I loved the preaching. And it really got me fired up. It really inspired me. And I would come home after church, and I would stand behind our console stereo and pretend that it was the minister's podium, and I would open up the Bible and I would imitate the minister preaching. So I think it's kind of funny that as a little girl I used to preach from the Bible, and now here I am, a minister, sharing from the Bible. Isn't that funny how some things happen? Never would have thought that it would come this way, but it has. So, here we go, Bible thumpers. John chapter 18, Jesus arrested. So let me read the story first, and then we'll look at it and see what interpretation comes. When he had finished praying, Jesus left with his disciples and crossed the Kidron Valley. Now, first of all, when John says when he had finished praying, this is not referring to the praying that Jesus did in the Garden of Gethsemane. You might remember that John does not have the story of Jesus praying in the Garden of Gethsemane. We went back to the book of Mark to read that story. It is totally skipped in the book of John, which is kind of interesting because according to the book of Mark, it was Peter, John, and James that went into the garden with Jesus. And so it's interesting that in his book, John would not even mention that whole scene that happened in Gethsemane. But it is not mentioned here. So when John 18 starts and says, when he had finished praying, it's referring to those prayers that we looked at the week prior to the Garden of Gethsemane. These were the prayers that Jesus prayed at what is called the Last Supper. There was a prayer that Jesus prayed for himself, which was a prayer asking for help in allowing that final ego death. There was a prayer he prayed for the disciples, which was a prayer praying that they would recognize the inner voice as the teacher and follow and listen to the inner voice, have that discernment. And then there was a prayer for all believers, a prayer that everyone would awaken. So when this John chapter 18 starts off, when he had finished praying, it's referring to these three prayers that would have happened in the upper room at the Last Supper. So when he had finished praying, Jesus left with his disciples and crossed the Kidron Valley. On the other side, there was an olive grove, and he and his disciples went into it. So that olive grove would be the Garden of Gethsemane. So there's a little bit of a mention here of going into the Garden of Gethsemane, but not much. Just he and his disciples went into it. That's the end of the story. from the book of John. And this would have been at the base of the Mount of Olives. On the other side, there was an olive grove, and he and his disciples went into it. Now Judas, who betrayed him, knew the place, because Jesus had often met there with his disciples. So Judas came to the grove, guiding a detachment of soldiers and some officials from the chief priests and Pharisees. They were carrying torches, lanterns, and weapons. Jesus, knowing all that was going to happen to him, went out and asked them, "Who is it you want?" "Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "I am he," Jesus said. And Judas, the traitor, was standing there with them. When Jesus said, "I am he," they drew back and fell to the ground. Again he asked them, "Who is it you want?" And they said, "Jesus of Nazareth." "I told you that I am he," Jesus answered. "If you are looking for me, then let these men go." This happened so that the words he had spoken would be fulfilled. "I have not lost one of those you gave me." Then Simon Peter, who had a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant, cutting off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. Jesus commanded Peter, "Put your sword away. Shall I not drink the cup the Father has given me?" So that's the story as it's told in the book of John. And we could read this story in each of the four Gospels and find differences in it. For instance, here we have the ear cut off, I believe, in another one of the Gospels. The ear is healed, right? Jesus picks up the ear and heals the man whose ear had been cut off by, well, in this book it says Peter. In the other book where it talks about the healing, it doesn't say who the disciple was that had the sword. But then there was a healing that occurred. Some of the stories say that Judas came up and kissed Jesus, and Jesus said, "You betray me with a kiss." Right? This is the only one that shows Jesus saying, "Who is it that you want? You know, I am he." They fall to the ground. He asks again. So it's interesting because none of these stories are exactly the same. And, you know, of course, that could be because the stories were witnessed and told by different people. And we can have different perceptions. And 50 years later, if we were to write it down, we could even have different memories. And in some cases, like the book of Mark and the book of Luke, Mark and Luke were not there. Mark, I am told, in my education, so whether it's true or not, I don't know. But in my education about the Bible, Mark was a friend of Peter's, and he would have told the story the way Peter told it to him. Luke was a friend of Paul's, and even Paul wasn't here. Paul probably heard the story from Peter or another apostle, so Luke would have at best had the story third hand. So, you know, if you really look at this, it kind of makes sense that the stories are told a little differently in each of the books. But John was supposed to have been there. John was supposed to have been a direct witness of what happened. So I'm not saying that that means that John's version is the right version and that other versions are wrong. Just commenting, you know, that John was there and that Mark and Luke weren't. So let's go back and look at this and see if there's any spiritual interpretation that is given that is helpful to us. Again, we talked about this last time I was here when we were reading from the book of Mark. I mentioned that, you know, I've been to Jerusalem, and so I know where the Garden of Gethsemane is, and I know where the guards would have come from. I know where Caiaphas's house is, where the guards would have come from. And I know what the Kidron Valley looks like. And so I said that I could imagine that Jesus could see them coming. And if he wanted to, he could have run. And he could have avoided this whole mess of being arrested and beaten and crucified. And in the book of John, it mentions that they were coming and that they were carrying torches, lanterns, and weapons. And so it looks like what I was imagining is true, that they could stand there in the Garden of Gethsemane at the base of the Mount of Olives, and they could see them coming. And it even says here in the book of John, Jesus knowing all that was going to happen to him, right? Jesus knowing all that was going to happen to him. So we have Jesus watching them coming, and he knows they're coming for him. And again, he's in the Garden of Gethsemane, possibly alone. That's the way the book is told, that the story is told in the book of Mark. And he could have ran, but he chose not to. And this to me is very important. This isn't a minor point. Because when we have primary interest in the me, whoever I think I am, this body, this mind, this personality, when we have primary interest in the me, we want to protect the me. We want people to think well of me. We want people to like me. Maybe if I'm here in the sanctuary sharing, we want people to think I am wise, that I have great wisdom. We want to be financially secure. We want, what all do we want? All kinds of stuff, right? Everything that makes me feel safe, loved, but that's still safe. Yeah, we want. Kathy has written in the room, we want. And this is very natural to the ego, which means this is very natural to humans, since most humans are operating off of the ego thought system. In fact, often when I'm working with teams of people, one of the things that I find is interesting is how the majority of the people on the team are not thinking about the we, the whole. They're not thinking about who we service, the customer, whoever that person is that we service from that team. They're usually thinking about me. You can see the me-ness in the thinking. And that's the ego. That's human for most humans. But what we see Jesus doing here is not thinking about the me. In the most extreme of circumstances, what would cause Jesus to allow himself to be arrested and, falsely tried, beaten and crucified, which is easy for me to see is absolutely unnecessary. Like, this just does not have to happen, right? This just does not have to happen. What would cause Jesus to allow this unfolding instead of running and hiding and protecting the me? I have contemplated this a number of times in my life, including sitting in the Garden of Gethsemane 3 times and contemplating it right there. And the only answer I can come up with every single time I contemplate it is that what Jesus wanted was truth. And he was wise enough to know that the obstacle to truth is the me. And he was wise enough to know that if he chose the impulses of the me, he was saying no to truth. He was denying truth. And he wanted truth more. So when this unfolding began to happen and he could see these men marching across the Kidron Valley coming to arrest him, in whatever way this story did unfold, he knew he had these strong impulses to protect the me. And if he gave in to these strong impulses to protect the me, what he was really doing was saying no to truth. And he wanted truth enough to not give in to those strong impulses. And in fact, the way the book of John tells the story, he went in exactly the opposite direction of those strong impulses. Those strong impulses to protect the self, to protect the body, right? He went in exactly the opposite direction. Because the way the book of John tells the story is, Jesus, knowing all that was going to happen to him, went out and asked them, "Who is it you want?" That's the opposite of running and hiding, don't you think? He didn't even sit there. He didn't even sit there and say, "Huh, if they're meant to find me, they'll come and find me. If they don't find me sitting, I'm not going to run. I'm going to stay right where I'm at. If they don't find me, then that must have been God's will. If they do find me, then that must be God's will." He didn't even do that. He went to them. He went to them. He said, "Here I am. Who do you want?" That's me. He went in exactly the opposite direction of the protective ego impulses. And the only thing that I can come up with that would have led him to do that, because again, nothing is actually served. You know, Christians have made up a story because they're trying to make meaning of this. In fact, I think Peter made up the story. My dear friend, the Apostle Peter, we have a very close inner relationship. He's the one that made up the story. You know, that Jesus died for our sins, because Peter wanted so much to make sense of this. And then, you know, everybody else believed the story. But this isn't true. There's no reason, you know, in the world story, for Jesus doesn't have to go through these steps. So what would make him go through these steps of being arrested and falsely tried and beaten and crucified? The only answer I can come up with is he wanted truth more than me. And he knew with every fiber of his being that if he continued to listen to me and do what me wanted him to do, that he was saying yes to the false self and no to truth. So we went in the opposite direction. Hello, Jamie. You can't go outside because there's men out there painting the house. You have to stay in. I'm sorry. She doesn't get that at all. Just see her staring. She wants her me satisfied right now. She's staring at me, but me wants to go outside. She wants what she wants, what she wants. All right, so back to the Bible. Jesus, knowing all that was going to happen to him, went out and asked them, "Who is it you want?" He wanted truth so bad that he made himself available to them. the opposite of what the ego wanted him to do. "Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. Now, I don't think these guys carried driver's license or anything with them in those days, so I don't know, maybe he could have even lied and said, he just hightailed it through the woods. He went that way. Right? He doesn't do that either. He says, "I am he." "I am he," Jesus said. And Judas the traitor was standing there with them. When Jesus said, "I am he," they drew back and fell to the ground. The only thing that this says to me is that Jesus had another opportunity to escape. Jesus had another opportunity to give in to the me. If they drew back and they fell to the ground, they're lying down. He's on his 2 feet. He's got a head start. So here's the ego giving him another chance. "Are you sure? You can still save the me." So does Jesus turn and run? According to the story, again he asked them, "Who is it you want?" So again, he went against the impulses of the ego. And they said, "Jesus of Nazareth, I told you that I am he." Jesus answered. This is an incredible demonstration of wanting truth. He did say, "If you are looking for me, then let these men go." Right? So he did have that paternal instinct, that compassion. Leave them out of it. You know, they weren't ready. They weren't ready to make the decision that Jesus was making now, and he did not want to force them into a situation that would increase their fear. That's love, right? So let them go. I'm the one you want. John wrote, "This happened so that the words he had spoken would be fulfilled. I have not lost one of those you gave me." My feeling about that is this is just John's commentary. In fact, every now and then I see things in the book of John that I think are just John's commentary. I think we're still seeing John's point of view. Some other John commentary that we had up here was when it was in parentheses and Judas the traitor was standing there with them. So John still has his own point of view. He's still seeing things through the filter of John. And so occasionally we get a little bit of John's ideas inserted in here. Then Simon Peter, who had a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant, cutting off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. Jesus commanded Peter, "Put your sword away." Now, it seems to me like some of the stories also say, or at least one of the other stories also says something about the man who lives by the sword dies by the sword. You guys remember that line coming from a different story? But that's not what this story says. This story says, "Put your sword away. Shall I not drink the cup the Father has given me?" Shall I not drink the cup the Father has given me? That line to me is very consistent with the rest of the way that John is telling this story, because here we have a Jesus in this version of the story who is going completely against the ego's protective impulses and making himself completely available to the situation, the unfolding of the script. And now he's even saying that's what he's doing. It's not just an interpretation. He's saying that this is what he is doing. Shall I not drink the cup the Father has given me? He is actually stating his willingness to just go with the unfolding of the script with absolutely no defense whatsoever. You know, it's interesting because A Course in Miracles says, when I defend myself, I am attacked. And when I hear that now, I think I used to hear it differently when I first began studying the Course. So, you know, there are, you know, those lines, as you know, when you spend more and more time with them, the meaning can shift and change as you're ready for additional understanding. But when I hear that now, if I defend myself, I am attacked. What that says to me is this true self that I am, the true self that I am, is unknown to me, remains hidden to me. Because I have chosen to defend the false self. I am claiming the body, personality, mind as me. And because I am claiming the body, personality, mind as me, I am unaware of the truth, unaware of the true self. And in fact, I remember Ellie Ruzdar, when she was here talking to us, actually in this exact same time slot, because I talked to her on a Wednesday afternoon during the Guiding Light time slot. So when she was here talking to us in this exact time slot, she was saying that, you know, when you saw the truth, when you got to that point where you saw the truth and you realized the truth, she said, you have to claim it. I remember those words very distinctly. You have to claim it. Well, you can't claim the truth. Sorry, Jamie, there's men outside. You can't claim the truth as your true self and the body, mind, personality as your true self at the same time. You can't have it both ways. If I defend myself, meaning the false self, if I defend myself, I am attacked. I do not know my true self. And so we see Jesus in John chapter 18 having a very clear understanding of this fact. If I defend myself, I am attacked. My true self is lost to me. And wanting the true self, wanting to claim that rather than the false self, he's walking right into the script as it's unfolding with absolutely no defense at any level. He is not allowing any fiber of his being to defend. I mean, you know, think of this, think of how the ego could play this, all right? Because the ego can be very, very smart. You know, we can lie to ourselves. We can pretend like we're being defenseless when we're not. You know, so here we have a situation where Peter, not Jesus, Peter has taken a sword and has cut off the ear of this soldier. You know, Jesus, if he wanted to lie to himself, could stand back and say, I'm not defending myself. That's Peter. I'm just watching it all unfold. Right? No. Jesus doesn't have an ounce of dishonesty in him right now. Because he has completely decided on what he wants, the truth. He is done with the false self. Done. And so when Peter cuts off Malchus's right ear, Jesus says, put your sword away. Shall I not drink the cup my Father has given me? In no way do I want to defend myself, because if I defend myself, I am attacked. I will lose the truth. I will not know the truth. It will be hidden by the false self. And I want only the truth now. This is what Jesus is saying. Now, the next part of this story is called Jesus Taking to Anas. Anas. I'm not really sure how to say this. It's A-N-N-A-S. I'm going to say Anas, Anas. Then the detachment of soldiers with its commander and the Jewish officials arrested Jesus. They bound him and brought him first to Anas, who was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, the high priest that year. Caiaphas was the one who had advised the Jews that it would be good if one man died for the people. Now, you know, I've been to Israel, as I've mentioned, and I have walked from the Garden of Gethsemane across the Kidron Valley to Caiaphas's house. Now, this says it first took him to Annas, who is Caiaphas's father-in-law. And I don't know for sure if Annas and Caiaphas lived in the same house or not. I don't know. But when you go to Caiaphas's house, or what they say is Caiaphas's house, underneath Caiaphas's house, that's hard to say, Caiaphas's house, there's a dungeon. And what they say is, when you're in Israel, is they say after the trial, where he was falsely accused, and before they took him to Pontius Pilate, there was a time there where Jesus needed to be stored somewhere, and he was stored in this dungeon in Caiaphas's house. And if it's not too crowded when you're there, you can go into the dungeon and you can sit in the dungeon and, you know, lean against the walls. And I love sitting in the dungeon at Caiaphas' house and contemplating the peace of knowing that the I here being Jesus, contemplating the peace of knowing that I did not fall for the ego's tricks. The peace of knowing that I chose the truth. And I can sit in that dungeon and I can feel the truth blossoming. I can feel the quietness of the mind in that dungeon. There's no more decisions to be made. You know, the decision, the wall the ego tried to put up so that I would not come here, I stepped right over that hurdle, and I can feel the peace blossoming in that dungeon. Like that dungeon became like the sage's cave. So again, this is talking about when Jesus is being taken to Annas, which is Caiaphas's father-in-law. Maybe at Caiaphas's house. I don't know. It doesn't say here in the Bible. And like I said, in Israel, they tell you that's where he was taken. They may have all lived in the same house. It was a huge house, almost like a palace. So the next part of this story is called Peter's First Denial. And you guys hear Jamie crying in the background. Poor doggy. Peter's First Denial. Simon Peter... I know, it's sad, Jamie. I'm sorry. Go lay down. You can't go outside. The guys are painting the back deck. Go lay down. Simon Peter and another disciple were following Jesus because this disciple was known to the high priest. He went with Jesus into the high priest's courtyard. But Peter had to wait outside at the door. The other disciple, who was known to the high priest, came back, spoke to the girl on duty there, and brought Peter in. You are not one of his disciples, are you? The girl at the door asked Peter. He replied, I am not. It was cold, and the servants and officials stood around a fire they had made to keep warm. Peter also was standing with them, warming himself. So as I mentioned, Caiaphas' house is kind of like a palace. I mean, here it is with a dungeon, and it has a fence all the way around it. And so Peter, because another disciple, it doesn't tell us who, because another disciple was known to Caiaphas, and this disciple brings Peter into the courtyard. He's able to get into the courtyard. But the girl at the door of the courtyard wants to make sure that Peter is not one of Jesus' disciples. And Peter, this is the first denial. Peter says he is not one of Jesus' disciples. The way this story is told, again, is a little different than the way it's told in some of the other books. The way it's told in some of the other books, you get the impression that Peter is afraid. And it's out of fear that he denies Jesus. He's afraid, you know, that he may be arrested, right? But the way the story's told here, I get a different sense. I get a sense that Peter is serving me. He wants to get inside the courtyard. He wants to be in a position to have as much news as possible about what's happening with Jesus. He wants to get as close as he can. And if he admits that he's one of Jesus' disciples, they're not going to let him in. That's going to leave him locked outside, and he won't have any information. So in order to get what I want, he denies Jesus. Now, there's a lot of symbolism in the story when it's told that way. Because every time we serve the false self, every time we serve the self to get what I want, we are denying the truth. You know, even if I behave in a certain way, act in a certain way, say certain things so that you will think well of me. I want you to see me in a positive light. And therefore, again, I act in a certain way and say certain things. When I do that, I am denying the truth. Because I'm acting from the ego thought system. Instead of just being tuned into intuition and saying whatever intuition would have me say, or saying nothing if that's what intuition would have me do, instead of being tuned into intuition and having only concern for truth, my concern is out there, what do you think of me, and now I'm saying or acting in a particular way that I think will get the favorable response that I want, and I'm completely denying the truth in doing so. The next part of this story is called The High Priest Questions Jesus. Meanwhile, the high priest questioned Jesus about his disciples and his teaching. So this would be Caiaphas. So he is definitely with Caiaphas now. Meanwhile, the high priest questioned Jesus about his disciples and his teaching. I have spoken openly to the world, Jesus replied. I always taught in synagogues or at the temple, where all the Jews come together. I said nothing in secret. Why question me? Ask those who heard me. Surely they know what I said. When Jesus said this, one of the officials nearby struck him in the face. Is this the way you answer the high priest? He demanded. If I said something wrong, Jesus replied, testify as to what is wrong. But if I spoke the truth, why did you strike me? Then Annas sent him, still bound, to Caiaphas, the high priest. Oh, this is interesting. I don't know. It's a little confusing to me. Well, maybe it's calling Anas, the high priest, in the way that you call, you know, Bill Clinton, President Clinton. You know, Bill Clinton is not the president now. Obama is. But he is still often referred to as President Clinton, right? Anas was the high priest in the year before Caiaphas. So they must be referring to, in this first sentence, when they say, meanwhile, the high priest questioned Jesus, they must be referring to Anas. Because at the end of this little section, it says, then Anas sent him, still bound, to Caiaphas, the high priest. And Caiaphas was the high priest at this time. So it must be Anas that questioned him. But again, it looks like Jesus is avoiding being put in a situation where he has to defend himself. And that sometimes can be a little challenging. You know, I don't like to practice the act of defense either. And I haven't liked practicing the act of defense in many, many years. Since about the time NTI was published. But I'll tell you, when it becomes the most challenging is when somebody is asking you a direct question. Because when someone asks you a direct question, they want you to provide an answer. And you want to be careful in the way that you answer, that you're not letting the ego take advantage of this little opportunity to slip in a little defense. And so it looks to me like Jesus is maintaining, he's providing an answer because he was asked a question, but he is maintaining the posture of not wanting to defend himself. So he's responding, why not ask those who have heard me teach? You know, he's giving an answer, but he's in no way defending himself. He's staying out of the ego, probably, you know, saying, take this opportunity, take this opportunity, take this opportunity. You know, you can make them understand. You can show them your point of view. You know, you can say what they want to hear. Instead, he's just like, you know, ask those others. And he doesn't know what those others are going to say. You know, he's not saying ask those others because he thinks those others will defend them. He's just giving an answer to a direct question that does not slip into defense. Because again, Jesus's practice right now is not to defend himself. If I defend myself, I am attacked. He doesn't want to claim the false self as me. He wants the truth. And then, of course, he gets hit for that. And then he just says, did I say something wrong? You know? You know, if I said something wrong, testify as to what was wrong. If I spoke the truth, why did you strike me? That takes us to Peter's second and third denials. As Simon Peter stood warming himself, he was asked, you are not one of his disciples, are you? He denied it, saying, I am not. One of the high priest's servants, a relative of the man whose ear Peter had cut off, challenged him. Didn't I see you with him in the olive grove? Again, Peter denied it. And at that moment, a rooster began to crow. So again, Peter is serving himself. But Jesus had told him that he would deny him three times. And then before the rooster crowed. And now that the rooster is crowing, what Peter has is an opportunity to see that he did that. He has an opportunity to see that he is denying the truth in favor of serving his own self-will. Let's see, we have 6 minutes left. Well, let me go ahead and read this next part. I don't know if we'll have time to discuss it, but let me read it. One thing I will say is interesting about the Bible is it doesn't tell us, at least not here, how Peter felt when he heard that rooster crow. We don't know if there was any reflection on Peter's part when he heard the rooster crow. We don't know if he was like, ah, that's what he said I would do. You know, why did I? We don't know if any looking happened. All right, so the next part of the Bible is called Jesus Before Pilate. Then the Jews led Jesus from Caiaphas to the palace of the Roman governor. By now it was early morning, and to avoid ceremony uncleanliness, the Jews did not enter the palace. They wanted to be able to eat the Passover. Jews are not supposed to go into the home of a Gentile. And if they do go into the home of a Gentile, there's a ceremony they have to go through to become clean again. And they didn't want to have to go through that, so they stayed outside of Pilate's palace. Pilate must have been a pretty reasonable guy, because it says, so Pilate came out to them. He didn't have to do that, you know. So he must have been somewhat reasonable, trying to get along with the Jews. Maybe he wanted to be liked, or maybe he just wanted peace so that he looked good to Caesar. Who knows? But for whatever reason, Pilate came out to them and asked, what charges are you bringing against this man? If he were not a criminal, they replied, we would not have handed him over to you. Pilate said, take him yourselves and judge him by your own law. But we have no right to execute anyone, the Jews objected. This happened so that the words Jesus had spoken indicated the kind of death he was going to die would be fulfilled. Pilate then went back inside the palace, summoned Jesus, and asked him, are you the king of the Jews? Is that your own idea, Jesus asked, or did others talk to you about me? Am I a Jew, Pilate replied. It was your people and your chief priests who handed you over to me. What is it you have done? Jesus said, my kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jews. But now my kingdom is from another place. You are a king then, said Pilate. Jesus answered, you are right in saying I am a king. In fact, for this reason I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me. What is truth? Pilate asked. With this, he went out again to the Jews and said, I find no basis for a charge against him, but it is your custom for me to release to you one prisoner at the time of the Passover. Do you want me to release the king of the Jews? They shouted back, no, not him. Give us Barabbas. Now Barabbas had taken part in a rebellion. So there isn't really time to discuss this. So I suppose we will look at this next week. And I suppose, since we're going to look at it next week, I'll spend the last 3 minutes playing a short little song. So let's see what we have here. Well, here's a little song. Oh, now we only have 2 minutes. That would be too long, so let me go find a shorter song. Here's a little song. Here's a little gospel song. I've got peace like a river.
I've got peace like a river. I've got peace like a river. I've got peace like a river in my soul. I've got peace like a river. I've got peace like a river. I've got peace like a river in my soul. I got love like a river, I've got love like a river, I've got love like a river in my soul, I've got love like a river, I've got love like a river, I've got love like a river in my soul. joy like a river in my soul, in my soul.
Yeah, and that joy comes from knowing that that you followed the true self instead of listening to the ego. All right, so I think that's it for today. When we come back next week, we will start. We'll look at the story again about Jesus before Pilate. But, you know, we're not too far from the end of John. You know, there's only a few pages left. Of course, this could take us a few weeks. There's only a few pages left in this book. So we're moving right along in the guiding light. I will see you guys. I'm back tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Time with Nancy Sullivan and Stephen Mead, and we're going to be reading and discussing NTI Luke, if you want to join us then. All right? See you tonight in the sanctuary. Bye-bye.